This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. We will not head to the polls to choose our next president for something like another 15 months. Yet, candidate announcements have been raining down on us since March 23rd, when Ted Cruz became the first leading candidate to jump into the race. Is it all too much too soon? And what of the tone of these campaigns? Well, we went out to hear the thoughts of voters.
There's no cooperation. There's no compromise. There's no negotiation. It's either my way or the highway.
To be honest, I'm not overly impressed by any of the candidates. I was really hoping for somebody that was going to be more moderate. I'm kind of disappointed.
Just seems to be confusion reigns no matter what. And I, at this state of the game, I'm not making any decisions till it thins down a little bit.
I think it's crazy business as usual. Certainly the Donald is nutsy, but look at some of the things that Ross Perot said or some of the things that Rick Perry said back in 2012. We've had nutty speeches from people since forever.
See Donald Trump as a sideshow as far as I'm concerned, but to a lot of his fans, I think Donald Trump is actually a serious political candidate.
Well, let's explore how the 2016 race to date squares with what we've seen in America's history as we say hello to historian Gleaves Whitney. He's the director of the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. So good to have you back on Stateside, Gleaves.
Thank you so much. It's good to be back.
Let's start with numbers, headcount. As we speak, and we know this could change at any moment, 17 Republicans showing up in the major polls, 5 Democrats, and Vice President Biden reportedly mulling over a run for the White House. Is this an unusually big crop of White House hopefuls?
Well, this far out, I don't think it's terribly unusual to have a lot of people show interest. I think because of the media cycles we're into now, people feel the need to declare and raise that money early. But in the olden days, people, a lot of people would certainly in the back rooms be entertaining. They would make some probes to get money and make, you know, some forays out in the public to see how their speeches were going over. It's just all more formalized and, frankly, provides a lot more entertainment nowadays.
And it is all being, carefully covered breathlessly all the way down, so you can't escape it even if you want to. Does history tell us whether, does it help or hurt to have a big field? Does it sharpen your chops if you're out there dueling with a lot of other rivals?
Well, I personally believe this far out, it's good to have robust debate. I mean, both major parties need to have debates within themselves, with each other, and then potential third-party threats. I think that's good in this process. I think it's amazing we had a record number of people on cable TV watching this last Thursday night debate. And if you combine the two debates, you know, the undercard debate and then the major spectacle that we had last Thursday, it's what was the biggest cable news viewership ever for anything that wasn't a sports event on cable. And I thought that that was a good sign that people are tuned in. I want Americans to listen to Donald Trump. They need to hear what he has to say. They need to hear how he says it. We need, you know, really be serious about the fact this guy, no matter who he attacks, whether it's the Mexican people coming across the border, or if it's John McCain, Megyn Kelly, for some darn reason, his numbers go up. And I was just looking at the poll numbers before our conversation, Cindy, and I'm still amazed at how strong Donald Trump is polling in the lead up to Iowa. It just is remarkable.
Yeah, and of course, he begins most every statement by pointing that out.
Yeah.
And what do you think Trump has tapped into in the minds of those voters whose support is giving him that big lead in the poll?
Well, here's the huge irony. Donald Trump is a creation of the failure of Republican leadership. You know, the Republicans took the House, then 2 years later they took the Senate, and they have not done anything but talk about immigration. And that is the key issue that I think that Trump has been able to capitalize on. The failure of Republican leadership in the Congress created Donald Trump's viable candidacy to this point. Now, you have to realize that Trump is somebody whose bubble's going to burst here before too long. He cannot sustain this faux campaign. It really isn't even a campaign. Go to his website. Just type in to Google Donald Trump for president and look at the website. There is not a position paper on the website. I think this is bizarre. This shows that he's just into entertainment, into sound bites, into outrage. We cannot have a serious discussion. Neither party can have a serious discussion with Donald Trump because we don't really know how he would do the things that he talks about doing.
But when people watch that and say, what's going on here? Is this TMZing the process that should be a serious process of choosing the next president?
You raise a great point. I mean, I said just a minute ago that I think that debate is good and healthy for the country. What I'm hoping is that it'll make people aware that when you get a Teflon Don like this, who's an entertainer more than he is anything else, that it'll bring some seriousness or return us to, hey, okay, now we need to get serious. Now, Trump did write a book, a policy book in 2011 about how to get, you know, America tough again. I think it's the title of the book was Time to Get Tough, Making America Number One Again. And if you go through it, you can see he leads with immigration and border control. He's obsessed, of course, with communist China and fair trade. He wants to retire debt without totally endangering Social Security or the other entitlement programs. And he wants to reverse Obamacare. Well, these are barely more than bumper stickers, the way they come out of his mouth. They're not serious policy issues. What I'm hoping, I think a number of people who are watching this are hoping, that the party now will start to police itself, that the 16 other candidates are going to really start piling on. I think now you can start to feel the momentum. I mean, I was delighted how Carly Fiorina, for example, catapulted out of the lower rung of the debate and into the upper echelon. She's running about number five, number six now in the polling, and boy, did she come out swinging against Trump. And this is exactly what that party needs.
It almost seems as if, you know, he's been in the driver's seat and the other ones are a little leery of taking him on directly.
Well, they are, and it's such an odd thing. It makes you wonder, did they all receive so many donations from him that they feel a little snake bit? They don't want to do anything to get him mad at them. But I think now, I do perceive a change. I think Republicans now are starting to police what's happening. And this is long overdue. They do need to stand up to him and, frankly, force him to be serious or get out of the race. Eventually, I think those poll numbers will start to come down. The problem, and I've heard analysis of this, when you have this many candidates, now this is going to be the real downside of this, when you have that many and he's controlling almost a quarter, he could win every primary until somebody else really emerges from the pack. Now you're starting to see signs that somebody like Carly Fiorina could be the dark horse who upsets Trump's bubble here. She's a woman who can take it to him. She's got credibility. She's got the articulation, and she is fearless, absolutely fearless.
The idea of this campaign silliness, you know, we see all this focus right now on this squabble between Trump and a Fox News anchor. We're not talking issues. We're talking about, you know, Trump versus Megyn Kelly or what he said about John McCain. Or we have the video of Ted Cruz cooking bacon by firing a gun, bacon on the muzzle of a gun. Or the video of Senator Lindsey Graham using a samurai sword, a blender, and a toaster to destroy old phones after Trump gave out Graham's phone number. Does this square with the kind of silliness we've seen in campaigns in the past, or have we taken this to a kind of a sad new art form?
Well, I think because of the presence of cable TV, you are seeing more demonstrations of silliness. I have no doubt that there were a lot of shenanigans in the past. Some of our past campaigns were outrageous, much more outrageous than today. For example, when you had Thomas Jefferson's media guru, a guy named Callender, saying that John Adams, the sitting president, was pimping in the White House. I mean, there were all kinds of outrageous things that were happening. Of course, Adams had to fire back through his media. You know, he had a few newspaper editors who were loyal to him, and they were saying, well, you've got in Thomas Jefferson an atheist. You can't trust him. So you've got all kinds of people out there who've always wanted to stir things up. Remember, in an age before TV and even radio, so going back to the 19th century, politics provided a lot of entertainment in this country. This is why Lincoln and Douglas could get up in their debates in the 1850s and hold forth literally for hours and keep people spellbound. It was high entertainment. It's what people did. It was sort of, you could get the Jon Stewart type crack. You could get all kinds of ad hominem attacks on the other person's personality, a lot of laughs at their expense. Americans, let's not fool ourselves. Let's not act too sanctimonious. Americans love the clown show.
I'm speaking with historian Gleaves Whitney, director of the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. And Gleaves, we heard the woman at the top of our conversation talk about the silliness and the other eccentrics we've seen in the past, and she pointed to H. Ross Perot for one. Is there the danger that people will just kind of turn their backs on the whole batch of them, just kind of Trump has kind of covered everything with his Trumpiness? is there that danger where people are just going to go, I don't know?
I think you ask a good question, because there's been so much cynicism about politics. But again, Americans tend to be cynical. This is why Jon Stewart was so successful for so many years. He tapped into the cynicism. And just as the Republican Party's failure of leadership created Donald Trump and gave him the traction he needed over the immigration issue in particular, I think our general climate of opinion and the way we seek out entertainment also encourages people like Trump and others to do all kinds of high shenanigans. It is a sport in our country. Democracy is something we can take for granted, and maybe in a perverse sort of way, Cindy, the fact that we can take it so for granted and be so lighthearted about it and buffoonish about it indicates maybe in some sense a relative strength of our democracy. Yeah. We don't have, you know, strictly political protests, you know, being run down by private army of another candidate, as you have in other countries. So on the one hand, maybe all of the hijinks is a sign of sort of this reservoir of strength in the American experience with politics. And on the other hand, showing us a lot of signs of cynicism, and there's a threshold at some point we really don't want to cross as a people. And I don't know what that line is.
I wonder, when you talk about crossing that threshold, with the fact that we've been at this for months. We had Ted Cruz declare his candidacy last March 23rd, and then, you know, the stream began. Hillary wasn't far behind April 12th. And did campaign season, has it always started this early, or how did this evolve? What does history show us?
No, it did not start this early. Again, I think it's a creature of media and the drive for entertainment value. And so the more outrageous people could be in front of the camera, the more attention seeking and getting. And of course, to have the cameras there running for that kind of thing, kind of in a pandering way to what the audiences want, I think that has certainly fed this. Realize that, you know, when John Kennedy ran for president back in 1960, he was apologetic about, you know, he thought, well, I know I'm getting in kind of early in January of 1960. I mean, there was just a different attitude toward campaigning. If you go way back to the beginnings, George Washington felt that it was beneath his dignity to campaign at all, and he really pretty much forced people to come to Mount Vernon to solicit and toady and wheedle him and beg him to get in to be the first president of the United States. Of course, they assured him he would run unopposed. You know, it was just a matter of counting all the electoral votes. You know, there were 69 of them, and that's exactly what happened. And that tradition held for a long time, for more than a century, where our candidates felt it was beneath their dignity to go out and campaign. However, let me just briefly add that surrogates were out campaigning on their behalf.
Okay, so they didn't have to get down and dirty too early. The surrogates could do it for them.
The surrogates provided plenty of entertainment.
But you think of the money, and we hear a lot of pearl-clutching and hand-wringing every time we go through an election cycle about the ridiculous amounts of money being spent to get elected. And I have heard people wonder aloud. They look across the pond and they say, how come the Brits can choose a prime minister with a few weeks of heavy campaigning?
Oh, I know. I mean, look at all the consultants we end up supporting. I mean, it's a cottage industry that's become a mansion. I mean, it's just huge, and the amounts of money being spent. Now, I remember back in 1992 when Arianna Huffington's husband was running for the California Senate seat, and it was considered outrageous that there were $20 million being spent in a California Senate race. Well, we are so beyond that threshold now. And yet, why is it that it continues? I mean, we, the people, have not really discouraged the process. We talk a good game. We laugh with Jon Stewart, but we really kind of go along with it. I think last Thursday proves that 24 million people tuning in. People are hungry for something out of the political process. It's that basic faith Americans have that ultimately in a democracy, truth will out, the right person will be in office. There's just sort of this almost a naive faith that we have in the institutions. But at the same time, there's the tension where we do talk cynically, but we continue to encourage it. Look at the people who participate by watching.
I know this is the first of many conversations we'll be having with historian Gleaves Whitney with the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. There's a lot of months of campaigning before we all walk in to actually cast that really, really important vote in November 2016. So it'll be really enlightening to follow through the process with you, Gleaves. Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.